Jai Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari. Jogi Janavalapa Girivada Jari Jogi Janavalapa Girivada Jari Yashoda Nandana Vraja Jana Ranjana Yashoda Nandana Vraja Jana Ranjana Jamuna Tira Vanachari Jamuna Tira Vanachari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari Gopi Janavalaba Girivada Jari Yashoda Nandana Vraja Jana Ranjana Jamuna Tira Vanachari Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna Krishna, Krishna, Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama Hare Hare Shapad, Paramahamsa Pariva Jakachari, Ashtataya Satishi Shimadis, Divine Grace, Abhayacharan Arvinda Bhaktivedanta Goswami Maharaj Prabhupada Ki Jai, Nantakodi Vaishnavinda Ki Jai, Namachari Shilaharidas Thakur Ki Jai, Premsikaho Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Karadha Shivasiti Gaura Bhaktivinda Ki Jai, Shri Shri Radha Krishna Gopa Gopina Shamakun Radhakun Giri Govardhan Ki Jai, Shri Vrindavan Dham Ki Jai, Shri Mayapur Navadweep Dham Ki Jai, Ganga Mayi Ki Jai, Jamuna Mayi Ki Jai, Bhakti Devi Ki Jai, Tulsi Maharani Ki Jai, Nu Raman Reti Dham Ki Jai, Bhakti Vedanta Academy Ki Jai, All glories to the assembled devotees, All glories to the assembled devotees, All glories to the assembled devotees, All glories to the lotus feet of Shishi Guru and Garanga, All glories to Srila Prabhupada. I don't know if it's because I'm so far away, but it's hard for me to hear you. So I'm going to ask you guys to sing with your full voice when we chant. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate
Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Thank you. So we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th canto, chapter 60, verse 54. And you come to the temple for class once a week, right? So have you been following the story? Do you all know the story of the talks between Krishna and Rukmini? Okay, I don't need to fill you in. Okay. Okay. Drishya. Griheshwar. Okay, right, let's do it the other way. Drishya Griheshwar. Yasa krim mayi twaya. Drishya Griheshwar. Yasa krim mayi twaya. Kritanuvritir bhava mochani kalai. Kritanuvritir bhava mochani kalai. Sudushkaraso sutaram dusashisho. Sudushkaraso sutaram durashisho. Yasur Yasumbaraya Nikritim Jashushtiya. Yasumbaraya Nikritim Jashushtiya. Drishya Griheshwar Yasa Krim Mayi Twaya. Kritanivritti Bhava Mochani Kalai. Sudushkaraso Sutaram Durashisho. Yasumbaraya Nikritim Jashustriya. Vaishnavis?
Yes. Pitamuriti Baba Mocha Nikalai. Siddhishtaraso Sitaram Tarashita.
Do any children, do they do it as a group or individually? Okay, first group.
Tishya Griheshwa Yasakim Mahi Twaya. Krita Muriti Bhava Mocha Nikalai. Sudushkaraso Sutaram Darashisho. Yasubaraya Nikritim Jashukya. Tushya Griheshwa Yasakrim Mahi Tvaya. Krita Nuvriti Bhava Mocha Nikalai. Sudushkarasho Sitaram Darashisho. Yasumbaraya Nikritim Jashusri. Krita Nuvriti Bhava Mocha Nikalai. Dushkarasho Sutaram Durashisho.
Okay, word for word. Drishtya, fortunately. Griha, of the house. Ishvari, O mistress. Asakrit, constantly. Mayi, to me. Twaya, by you. Krita, done. Anuvriti, faithful service. Bhava, from material existence. Mochani, which gives liberation. Kalai, for those who are envious. Sudushkara, very difficult to do. Aso, it. Sutaram, especially. Darashisha, whose intentions are wicked. He, indeed. Asum, her life heir. Barayaha, who only maintains. Nikritim, deception. Jisaha, who indulges in. Striyaha, for a woman. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada's disciples. Fortunately, O mistress of the house, you have always rendered me faithful devotional service, which liberates one from material existence. This service is very difficult for the envious to perform, especially for a woman whose intentions are wicked, who lives only to gratify her bodily demands, and who indulges in duplicity. Purport. Srila Jiva Goswami poses the following question. Since devotional service easily awards one liberation, isn't it possible that everyone will be liberated and the world will no longer exist? This service is very difficult for the envious to perform. The great Acharya answers that there is no such danger, since it is very difficult for envious, duplicitous, sensuous persons to faithfully serve the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And there is no shortage of such people in the world. Om Gyana Timurandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshun Nalitam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha. So there's a lot of kind of big words in here, and I want to make sure you understand them. So the word envy, if somebody asks you, what does the word envy mean? Can any of the older students give me an answer? Does anyone know what the word envy means or how they've heard it used in Prabhupada's books? Being jealous and wanting that other person to not have it. Being jealous. Good. Yes, and actually the dictionary is a feeling of discontent, which means you're not happy, you're disturbed in mind, and or covetousness, which means you want what they have, right? So especially their success or their possessions, their wealth, their fame. And duplicity, anybody know what duplicity means? Anybody?
Say one thing and do another.
Sometimes, yeah. Double dealing, same kind of thing. Underhandedness, dishonesty, fraud, those are all different words or definitions for the word duplicity. So I was thinking about this in relation to the material world. And then one other word, sensuous. So this is a old word, English word also. Sensuous, does anybody know what that means? I can ask the adults too. Any adult definition of sensuous? Chitari?
Absorbed in sensuous, or absorbed in activities of the senses.
Absorbed in an activity of the senses, correct. So, or another definition I found, alive to the pleasures of the senses. Okay, that's what having a material body in the material world is all about, is trying to seek pleasure through the material body. So now Rukmini, she is like such a great devotee. I mean, she's the goddess of fortune herself, and she's personal associate of Krishna. And her whole life is dedicated to pleasing him, right? She didn't want anybody else. She didn't want any other kings or princes. She only wanted Krishna. You all know the story, right? Everybody here knows the story? Okay, so she wouldn't take anybody else for her husband. Absolutely not. Only Krishna. And she'd never even met Krishna. She'd never even seen Krishna. And yet, she knew that Krishna was the only one that she could love and serve with her whole heart and soul. Now, in this world, the history is full of powerful kings and princes and presidents and politicians and wealthy people and all kinds of celebrities, right? Whether they're actors or sport athletes or who else? Who are some of the other celebrities in this world that people want to be like? Superheroes? Who?
Rock
stars, that's right. Musicians, rock stars, singers. Who else? What can think of? Sports heroes, movie stars. Rich, people who are rich. People who are powerful, right? People who are in charge of whole countries or big companies or planets. Some people are envious of Lord Shiva, Lord Brahma, demigods with great powers.
Emperors.
Emperors, okay. Right, some people look up to the saintly people, religious leaders, and people who do amazing charity in this world, and great sadhus and sages, right? So, if somebody has some of Krishna's Bhagavan, right? So, Lord Krishna, he has all the qualities in full. He has all the wealth. Nobody in this world can say they're that rich because Krishna's got it all. And nobody is as beautiful as Krishna except his consorts, like Srimati Radharani and Rukmini Devi. And nobody's as intelligent, right? Krishna has all knowledge. Would you like to have all knowledge so you didn't have to go to school? Or all knowledge so that you could help others, right?
So Krishna has all, and what else? I only named three. Tell me some of Krishna's other qualities that define him as Bhagavan. Yes?
Most attractive.
Most attractive or the most beautiful. Yes. What else?
Cunning,
yes, that's one of his qualities, but it's not exactly what I'm looking for, but that kind of goes under the most intelligent. Yes?
Strong.
He is the strongest, that's right. None of the bodybuilders or athletes in this world can hold a candle to Krishna's strength, right?
The best.
He's just the best. He's renounced. Imagine having everything. Like, in this world, when we see somebody's very wealthy, and if they lose their fortune, sometimes they commit suicide. Sometimes they just lose all motivation in life if they've been used to a high standard of living, a lot of wealth. But Krishna, he has it all, and he's not attached to it. That's right.
Honest?
Sometimes. Most of the time. Krishna is also the trickiest of all, right? That's Krishna. It says Krishna is the greatest cheat. If you're a cheater, he will cheat you. So in this world, if somebody has some of these qualities, people become envious because they want that wealth, or they want that fame, or they want that knowledge, or they may want that renunciation even. So in the purport, we're hearing this description that. Actually, in the verse itself, Lord Krishna is describing that there are those who are envious, not just of him, of others, and they may have wicked intentions, and they live only for sensual pleasure. So they have this duplicity. So in the history books, as you get older especially, you'll hear about a lot of different people that tricked kings or emperors, maybe even killed them, poisoned them, or spies that trick men, you know, sometimes women spies will trick powerful politicians and even kill them. So many different things happen to gain somebody else's wealth. But not just in the Kali Yuga histories, we even know in the Mahabharata, right? What Duryodhan did to the Pandavas to try to trick them out of their kingdom. And some of the kings that were envious of Krishna and wanted to get rid of Krishna so that he wasn't in the way and they could have Krishna's power and Krishna's wealth. So these different sometimes somebody can pretend to be a very dear friend. But we see this in the modern era. People become someone's friend because of their wealth or their fame. And the celebrities and the sports famous people, they have a problem with this. It's hard for them to know who's their real friend, who's going to really be there for them, and who's just there to share in their wealth and their fame and hang out with them. So this is very selfish, right? So how would you describe selfish? How would you describe as someone selfish? Unkind. Or they're only selfish, means they care about themselves. They mostly care about their own interests. And interestingly enough, self-interest is also described as with your someone who's just interested for themselves, maybe with a disregard for others. Yes? Someone who has stuff and they don't want to share it. Right, because they just care about themselves. They don't care about others. And if they're playing a game, they want it their way. So as children, you're playing games. When grown-ups do it, it's kind of the same thing, but it's just on a bigger scale and it might affect a lot more people. So interestingly enough, the definition for self-realization is the fulfillment of one's potential. So as spirit souls, part and parcel of Krishna, to actually fulfill our real potential is what? How do you fulfill it? Do you know the word potential? It means to be the best you can be the most you can be. So how would you do that as Krishna's devotee? try? No? Okay. Do I have to turn? Do I have to ask this of the adults? Okay. Okay. Worshiping Krishna every day? Yes.
Chanting japa?
Yes.
Chanting the holy name
in japa and kirtan? Yes. Serving his devotees. Good. So, when you think of the materialists, and like what I was talking about, these people that are willing to actually kill to get somebody else's wealth or to get the crown. I went to Europe once, and we were in the country of Scotland, and we were at one of the old castles, and there was a list in bronze on the wall, very long list of every king who had been the king of that castle, that area of Scotland. And some of them only lasted not even a year. Some of them 2 years, 5 years, 10 years. Now, why do you think they were young men. How come they only lasted as king 2 or 3 years? Somebody poisoned them? Somebody killed them in battle? Killed in their sleep? Well, most of them were killed in battle, but it was just interesting that even everybody seeing, all the other ambitious men or warriors seeing that the king before them only lasted that long, still they wanted that position. So that desire is a perverted desire of wanting to be Krishna's servant, because if you're a servant of Krishna, you get it all too. Krishna has it all, and if you serve Krishna with love and devotion, Krishna shares everything he has. Like, think about all of the Lord's great devotees. Think of the devotees in Vrindavan, Goloka Vrindavan, right? Krishna's cowherd boyfriends and all the gopis, all of Krishna's girlfriends. They don't want to be Krishna. They don't want to be in charge, right? They love Krishna, and they want to play with Krishna. They want to serve Krishna. They want to dance with Krishna. He's the Lord of their life. He's their everything. So it's completely different in the spiritual world. And until one gets free from this envy, one doesn't get to go back to Goloka Vrindavan. So these devotees are so dear to Krishna. One is described pranadana. These devotees are the wealth of Krishna's heart. Can you say that? Pranadana? Pranadana. The wealth of Krishna's heart. Krishna's heart, yes. So it's described, Krishna has so many boyfriends to play with, and they don't think Krishna's God. They have so much fun with Krishna, getting to play with Krishna. They think they're equals. They climb on Krishna's back, they have Krishna climb on their back, they chastise Krishna sometimes, and they challenge Krishna to wrestle with them or to race him. Or, you know, who can swim the fastest, and so many things that Krishna's cowherd boys, friends. And even the gopis, who are considered to be in some ways Krishna's greatest devotees, even the gopis, they get a little, not exactly jealous, but the cowherd boys get to play with Krishna all day long. And they're feeling great separation from Krishna while the boys are all in the forest taking care of the cows. The girls are waiting and waiting and waiting for Krishna to come back. So sometimes they glorify the cowherd boys. They're so much more fortunate than we are. They get to be with Krishna and Balaram all day long. And they don't have to hide their affection. They don't have to pretend to be indifferent to Krishna. Everyone knows how much they love Krishna. They get to show it all the time. So this is what, these are the footsteps we want to follow in, the lotus footsteps of the cowherd boys and the cowherd girls and the gopis and the older gopis and the gopas of Vrindavan that love Krishna more than anyone or anything. And they don't have any of that envy in their heart. They're not thinking that they want to be Krishna. They just want to love Krishna and serve Krishna and play with Krishna. Thank you all for being so attentive in class. Thank you. We'll see you again soon. So Srila Prabhupada, since the kids are, I'll share, in the Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna himself speaks about envy. And these are very important verses and purports for us to understand, since that's what's keeping us in this material world. At least that's what's keeping me in this material world. So in one class, Srila Prabhupada was speaking that devotees are paradukha dukhi, that the symptom of a devotee is they are unhappy seeing others that are unhappy. And this is the opposite of material consciousness. In the material world, people, when they see somebody's misfortune, it actually gives them some relief. Maybe they don't actually feel happy from it, but it gives them relief, like, glad that wasn't me. Glad that wasn't me. So this is actually a symptom of envy, that we're not, if we see somebody else's misfortune, that we're not feeling also that kind of empathy for our brothers and sisters, that and really feeling that suffering. So we can examine our own consciousness. If we feel happy when somebody else is distressed, then we can examine that envy. And it pervades everything. It pervades the business world. It certainly pervades the political world. It pervades our families. Even within our own family, we may feel some envy towards one another. So spiritual advancement means to become non-envious. Paramo nirmatsaranam satam. So vastavya vastu. One must become paramo nirmatsaram. I'm sorry, without my glasses, I'm useless. Nirmatsaram. So matsara means envious, and nirmatsara means non-envious. And the great souls, that is their foremost quality that they are decorated with, is being non-envious. So Srila Vyasadeva describes in the very beginning of the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 1, Verse 2, that the candidates for those who understand the Srimad Bhagavatam is for those who are not engaged in cheating religion. Dharma Kaitava. So all types of cheating religion is kicked out from the Srimad Bhagavatam. And those who are non-envious, they're the ones that are qualified to understand this knowledge and the confidential pastimes of the Lord that are spoken about in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Srila Prabhupada gives the example of a mirage, that everything in this material world is a false reality. So, do any of you know what a mirage is? Yes. An illusion, something that you think you see, but it's not really there. Excellent. So, have any of you ever seen a mirage? I don't know about here in Florida. I'm from the west coast of the U.S., and when we would drive through Arizona, when you drive in desert conditions, you see mirages. And so many times I would be driving, because I was driving there for Sankirtan, and we would be driving many, many hours. And it looks like there's water in the distance. It's something in the atmosphere tricks your eyes, and it really looks like there's water in the distance. That's true. When it gets really hot here, sometimes it looks like there's water on the road ahead. But in the desert, there'll be a whole area. It looks like a big body of water, like a lake or a reservoir of water. And the animals, they'll actually go running after it. And they're so hot and so thirsty, and they want the water so bad. And they'll go running after it. And you keep going, and the way the atmosphere tricks the eyes, you keep going and it keeps looking like it's just up ahead. And that's exactly, it's such a good example for trying to find pleasure in the material world, that it's just up ahead. I'm going to keep running. I'm going to keep, because I'm thirsty. I'm hot and I'm thirsty, and there's water ahead. And that's how most people spend their life, their sojourn in the material world, is running after that water, running after that relief, looking desperately for that material happiness. So when we switch our consciousness from trying to be the enjoyer to serving the supreme enjoyer, then that's when we actually experience happiness. Like when you hear the stories of Krishna's devotees, they sound pretty happy, don't they? What do you guys think? Any responses? When you're reading the stories, the pastimes in Krishna book, or hearing in the Bhagavatam class, or Chaitanya Charitamrita, do you think, oh, I want to be there too? Does that happen to you? So, I was actually thinking, when I was asked to give the class today, I was thinking, well, actually probably a lot of these kids are more qualified than I am to speak about being non-envious. And because you have the very, very special fortune of taking birth in a devotee family and getting to go to the school that's been given to you by Srila Prabhupada, that's based on Srila Prabhupada's teachings. And Srila Prabhupada is an ambassador of the spiritual world. He's come here to this material world to give us Lord Chaitanya and Lord Krishna's teachings so that we can actually change our consciousness. But how many of you get to read with your parents at home? Do you get to read with your parents? I'll tell you a story. Is Mother Nautica still here? How many of you know my son, Sri Gauramani? Do you know my rascal son? Now he's, a lot of you do. Now he's quite a bit older. He just turned 21. When he was at the Bhaktivedanta Academy in first grade, when he was learning to read, he refused to learn to read. He wouldn't learn to read. It was became a real problem. Now, from the time he was, well, actually from the time he was a baby, because Malini is 3 years older, so from the time he was a baby, I always read to the kids. We didn't have any TV at home. So we read, and we read, and we read, and we read everything. And he loved to hear me read. And he knew the Mahabharata, he knew the Ramayana, he knew the Bhagavatam, and the Chaitanya Charitamrita, because I always was reading to him. And I found out when we asked him, why won't you learn to read? And he's very stubborn. And we found out, it took us a little while to figure it out, but he finally told me, if I read, you won't read to me anymore. I said, of course I'll read to you. That's why you won't learn to read. And he was actually just tricking the teachers because he was learning to read. He just would pretend he couldn't read. So then we offered him a few bribes, and he all of a sudden could read just fine. But what happened, it was interesting. So then I knew that I needed to keep reading to him. And we still sit down and read sometimes together. And then once he got to the point where reading was exciting for him, then he started reading to me. And we would do that mostly in the evenings. But so I don't think that didn't happen to any of you, right? You didn't pretend to not be able to read? Okay. So you can give Gauramani a hard time the next time you see him. So, and how many of you have grandparents that are devotees too? Quite a lot of you. Yeah. So I take the dust from your feet on my head. And we were talking about serving devotees. So serving devotees, also remember your parents. And for many of you, your grandparents are also devotees of Krishna. So serving them also will help you get even more of Krishna's mercy. And it's actually magical how our heart becomes clean from hearing about Krishna and his devotees and his pastimes and his qualities. It's not something we can do on our own, clean our hearts. It happens by the mercy of the pure devotees and by the mercy of the Lord, that our hearts become clean. So, this is actually our transcendental self-interest. Most people in this world, their self-interest is to get ahead, to become wealthy, to become famous, to become knowledgeable, to become beautiful, right? That's the same qualities we were talking about, the Krishna as Bhagavan possesses. But this is our real self-interest is to follow in the footsteps of those who are dear to Krishna. And Rukmini is such a great devotee of the Lord, Queen Rukmini. So it's nice while we're in this reading this chapter, we're actually coming to the end of this chapter, to meditate on Queen Rukmini, her unalloyed devotion. So much love and so much devotion that when Krishna teased her and she thought, oh my goodness, what if he's not pleased with me? What if he goes away from me? What happened? She fainted. Her heart was so aggrieved that she could possibly be separated from Krishna for a moment. And the cowherd boys, when it's described, they're in the forest with Krishna playing, and Krishna just goes after some wandering cows, and they can't see Krishna for a few moments, and sometimes they fall unconscious. They can't go without seeing Krishna. They can't go without being without Krishna. So this is what we want to aspire for, to be like these devotees in Vrindavan, that we don't want to go even a moment without thinking about Krishna, remembering Krishna, talking about Krishna, asking others about Krishna. So I'm going to stop there, and if there's any questions or if any of you want to share how you think about Krishna and how you remember Krishna, open it up. Anybody want to, any questions or anything you want to share? Hare Krishna, Sesha Prabhu.
Hare Krishna, Mother Kasturba. Thank you for your class. You mentioned there just at the end, I think you said it's easy for the heart to become clean. I just wondering, can you give an example of what it feels like or means that the heart becomes clean?
I was actually said it's magical.
Yeah, magical.
It's magical. Can I give you, well, I can give you an example from it. Little Mercy, and from the Shastras, is that we become attracted, our mind and our hearts. We're eager to come and see Krishna in the temple. We're eager to chant his holy name in Kirtan and Japa. We see the Prasadam as non-different from the Lord, that it's his remnants, that we are able to, when we see others, we perceive Krishna's in their heart. When we see a devotee of the Lord, we want to offer our obeisances, we want to hug them, we're so happy to see them. When we're eager to read the scriptures, those are symptoms that the heart is becoming cleansed, because the envy is what keeps us from wanting to hear about Krishna, wanting to chant Krishna's name. For those of you who've well, for all of us chanting japa, but I know I've had the good fortune of being on countless japa retreats and chanting 64 or 75 or 85 rounds in a day after day, and it's like all the things that come up, all the impurities that surface in the heart, that I don't want to just chant Krishna's name. I want to be the center. I want to be the enjoyer. I want to be... So we can, when we see the difference between wanting to be Krishna's servant and Krishna's devotee and hear about him and tell others about him, that is such a stark contrast with material consciousness of what do I want? How do I want to enjoy? What's important for me? Who's giving me recognition? Who's serving me? Who's, you know, how much money am I accumulating? How successful am I in my field of endeavor? So it's a pretty big contrast. So, and that's why, you know, when Prabhupada, in the beginning part from Prabhupada's class, he's saying we can look and examine, we want to examine our own mind and our consciousness when envy shows up, when we feel that discontent when we're serving Krishna, or we feel that discontent, or when we are attracted and a little jealous of somebody else's possessions or qualities or fame. Does that answer? And someone else can probably add more, including yourself.
I had a comment and two questions. The comment is, the Sridhar Swami in the commentary to this verse, Nirmat Saranam, defines envy. And he says, envy is intolerance for another man's progress. That's how he defines it. had two questions. The first question was related to, you mentioned the mirage. Mm-hmm. This morning I got a question from a Bhagavad Gita class attendee. And he says, or she says, I don't know who it is there an objective reality? Or is only our perception of reality real? That's his or her question. The second question I had was with respect to a point you made about renunciation. There are people who are also envious of another person's renunciation. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if you have an example. I couldn't think of one.
Well, for those who may be envious of someone else's renunciation, it's because they themselves value that quality, and they may be themselves aspiring for that. So what just came to mind, and maybe some of you have also some examples from Shastra, but Durvasa Muni, who was himself a great mystic yogi, very renounced, but then on some level he must have been envious of King Ambarish to treat him in such a way, to create a demon to kill him. I mean, that's like kind of even hard for us to imagine that level of envy. So that's one example that just came to mind. But we do see in India, where renunciation is valued, and there are other places too. You see in generally in religious congregations, the renunciation of the priests or the monks or the nuns or the sadhus is valued and it's appreciated, but then there will be some that may envy that. Okay, Badahari Prabhu is giving the example of Haridas Thakur.
The magistrate was in of Haridas Thakur. Renunciation and also his
fame. Yes, so he sent a prostitute to Haridas Thakur over and over again to endeavor to make him fall down, to expose him as not a true renunciate, but a imitator.
Welcome back.
Oh, well, so, I didn't answer the second question. I think I need somebody more erudite, scholarly, to answer that question. You want to answer that question, Sitaji Muni? About... Oh, okay. Please. The objective reality. Good.
I have a relative answer to that one.
Okay. Thank you.
Well, actually, I was at a conference at FSU, and one of the scholars there was a very well-established scholar. Won a Pulitzer Prize, actually. And he had some kind of Christian background, and this topic comes up all the time, especially mm-hmm. in contemporary intellectual climate. So his response was, there may well be an objective reality, but as individuals, we only have a relative perception of it. So, you know, even...
As individuals or as conditioned souls with faulty senses, faulty intelligence,
well, that
faulty...
top of it, that's... We're taking this crowd, but even in pure devotional service, all the gopis have a relationship with Krishna. They're not like, you know, Moses on Mount Sinai just like telling you exactly what's happening. I mean, and you know, they're absorbed in that. They're not playing this omniscient game with it. They're engaging in a loving exchange. And what they need to know to facilitate that exchange, that's fine with them. I mean, they don't need to know everything.
Well, and some of you may and some of you may not be aware, there was quite a few threads on the internet, discussions about that relative reality just in relation to a really goofy thing about how people perceive color on a dress. Did any of you see that black dress, blue-black dress, or gold-white dress? There was actually... amazing to see how our own eyes can be tricked just by color around. And what was beyond the discussion that hit all the threads, the psychiatrists and psychologists and color therapists and all of those who weighed in, and just how All of us, each and every one of us, have our own perception of reality. We're all in the same room right now together, right? Maybe. How many of your minds were just somewhere else before I said that? On what you're going to do today, or who you're going to play with, what you're going to eat for lunch, or... So, all of us, right? How many of you have brothers and sisters? How many of you are just like your brother or sister? Right? You live in the same house, you have the same parents, maybe you even go to the same school, maybe you're only a year apart or 2 years apart, and yet you're very different people. And how many times have you been with a friend or a teacher or one of your brothers or sisters, and they see something entirely differently than you do? Does that happen to anybody? Or at work? Or, you know, it's like, it happens for all of us. We all are looking through the lens, not just of our eyes, which was an interesting thing for me as an artist, and just that the color could be completely different. That I myself would go back and forth between seeing the colors on that dress one way and then the other way, just depending on... Did you experience that too, Kamala? No. But the point is just, and such different colors, so many times I've had the experience explaining a color to somebody that I need you to get this color for me or pick out this for me, and I get something different because they see the color, referring to my good husband here, they see the color differently than I do. And that happens not just with colors on clothing. It happens with everything in our lives. We see things differently from one another. So, and I'm curious, Prabhu, how would you answer that question? Yes.
I was going to say, I haven't written the answer, but I was going to say the four defects that you mentioned, and then quote the first verse of the Srimad Bhagavatam with Tejo Vari Mridam, the example of the mirage that you gave. You reminded me of that verse, so that's why I want to thank you for answering the question. So I was going to just mention that. The Prabhupada quote says that we make the mistake all the time of seeing fire in, what is it? I confuse this all the time, but anyway. Fire in water, water in land, land in fire, whatever. So I was going to quote that. Thank you.
This is a short one. When I think of that, I think there's tattva and there's rasa. So the tattva is objective and the rasa is subjective.
The absolute truth, tattva, and rasa being subjective. Thank you.
I was just going to say another modern day analogy of the mirage is the video game. And we talk a lot about this with young people, is that the video game feels really real. Oh my God, you just killed me. Oh, I don't have this life now. Or, oh, what are you doing? And it feels so real. Like, that's what reality is. Mm-hmm. But then there's the person playing the game. And so, like, that's just a way to see, like, sometimes in the material world, it's like we're in a video game. Mm-hmm. It's not real, but it feels like it is. And so that's just another way to see the objective versus perceived.
Thank you.
I was thinking about one example, what Mother Mohan Prabhu was talking about, tattva, absolute, you know, objective, rasa, was past time about Mother Yashoda and catching Damodar. And when she's running after Damodar, her flowers fall from her hair onto the ground. So one devotee says, the flowers fell because they didn't want to have anything to do with Mother Yashoda catching Damodar. And another devotee says, the flowers are falling on Mother Yashoda's lotus feet because they're so happy that she's running after Damodar and going to catch. So they're two different things, but both are true.
Mm. Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. There's one verse I want to read before we close out the class, but go ahead.
I just wanted to thank you for coming back to us and bringing your experience from all over the world. You and Banahari, thank you. Anyway, but we're talking about being envious of someone's renunciation. But what I was thinking is that renunciation requires an effort. You know, we have to, you know, to either use what we have in Krishna's service or not be running after things, being kind of self-satisfied. But that requires a lot of work. And someone who has the happiness of renunciation, you know, we can look at them and say, wow, they're really happy. But they've been endeavored for that renunciation. But we want their happiness without the endeavor. Mm. That's what I see as the, you know, well, I want that too, but I don't want to be renounced. You know?
Right. We want the simple life. We want the not being entangled. Before you go, because I know it's time to go. Oh, actually, I do want to share one thing. I've been, I won't say all over the whole world, but I have traveled a lot in the last year. And I have to say, New Ramanreti is the best community. And you guys have the most awesome school. And we have the most beautiful, well taken care of deities. And thank you for letting me come back. I'm so grateful to be here. And before you leave, I just wanted, this is a very important verse that I wanted to read to you earlier. But this is what we have to look forward to when we purify our hearts of envy. Krishna says in the 9th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, verse 29, I envy no one, nor am I partial to anyone. I am equal to all. But whoever renders service unto me in devotion is a friend, is in me, and I am also a friend to him. So this is what we have to look forward to. It's worth it to give up our false independence, our false ego, our false reality, to enter into the reality of loving and serving Krishna and becoming Krishna's dear servant, dear friend, and having Krishna, Krishna's love and reciprocation. It's worth it. Thank you. Hare Krishna.